I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonder Root artist feature, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with visual artist, scholar, and curator, Fahamu Piku. Fahamu, how you doing?
Hey, what's up, Floyd? Good to be here.
Always happy to have some time to spend with you, and this is a special edition of the Wonder Root podcast because we're talking about Elevate Atlanta and your involvement in that. So let's talk about the theme of Elevate as you're curating it. Forever I Love Atlanta. Where did that phrase come from for you, and what does it mean?
Well, I'll start by talking about the way that I kind of was brought into this project. So Camille Love, who's the director of the Office of Cultural Affairs, approached me and basically was like, we really want you to curate this year's Elevate Festival. And I gave it some thought because, you know, I had a lot of other kind of projects and stuff going on. And, you know, this is my first time curating a project of this scale, you know, so I really took that seriously. But I also began to think about the program and think about what Elevate has been in the city, how I might be able to, you know, contribute, you know, to the legacy that it already had. And one of the things that I began to think about was the fact that even though Elevate has been around for 5 years, it's still a really large percentage of the city, you know, and that even extends to, you know, the kind of smaller pockets, you know, like the creative community that are still very unfamiliar with what Elevate is. You know, some people have heard of it but didn't know quite what it was. Some people had never heard of it before. And some people knew who it was. Well, I mean, knew what it was, but, you know, had maybe not been in a few years or something like that. And I was like, what can I do to endear Elevate to the city of Atlanta, to make it something where people are like looking forward to it every year, to make it exciting, to make it fun? And I began to, you know, kind of flash back to just my experience with the city. And, you know, when I first came here in 93, it was not uncommon to hear people, you know, screaming at Fela, Forever I Love Atlanta, you know. They were wearing their Fela gear, and they said, you know, they would say it stood for Forever I Love Atlanta. And it was just kind of like a underground, you know, black cultural expression, you know, around, you know, pride in Atlanta. And, you know, being a transplant, I found that intriguing because I didn't know very much about Atlanta before I came here. You know, I literally just came here to go to school. But I felt, you know, I found myself falling in love with it. And I kind of understood it by the time that I graduated college and I was leaving to go to New York. And when I got to New York and I'm working in New York, I found myself like homesick. You know, that was the first time I really was like, man, I really love Atlanta. You know, I got to go back. I want to be there. Like, that's where I want to be. And that brought me back. That's been over 20 years. And so, again, thinking about how the city has really shaped the artist that I've become and really shaped the way my perspective on the world, shaped my perspective as an artist. You know, I knew that I wanted to do something that was Atlanta-centric, something that shifted the conversation from making comparisons of Atlanta to other places. You know, oh, Atlanta's like a little New York. Atlanta's, you know, this. Atlanta's like a smaller version of this. And Atlanta is Atlanta. And I wanted to do something that really, like, spoke to, you know, who and what Atlanta is and why she's special, why so many people are drawn here, why so many people are doing such amazing things, why Atlanta is the pulse of hip-hop right now, why, you know, the artists that are here are, you know, jet-setting around the world and, you know, doing amazing things, you know, winning, you know, major awards in, you know, all over the world. And, you know, why our universities graduate some of the top scholars, why Fortune 500 companies are like fighting for space down here. You know, like, what is it about Atlanta that makes Atlanta, Atlanta? And that's what I wanted to kind of celebrate.
Now, when it comes to this project from a curatorial perspective for you, what were some of the things that you really wanted to make sure were included in this whole expression of love for the city?
I think the ultimate thing that I was looking for, it was really an articulation of that feeling that Atlanta gives, you know? And I say that, you know, with the idea that I've been fortunate enough to travel to a lot of places, and I've never been anywhere that felt quite like this. And it's really hard to put into words. It's really hard to go someplace and be like, well, if you go to Atlanta, it's going to be blah, 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 blah. Because the truth is, you know, Friday, I could tell you what's happening in Atlanta, but by Monday, it'll be a completely different place, right? But that's a part of what makes Atlanta unique and special, is the fact that she's constantly reinventing and changing and emerging and evolving. But when we put out our call, you know, I kind of wrote a description, you know, that talked about the history of Atlanta, you know, how she's been a city of many different names, how she's been a city of many different looks, how, you know, during some of the most volatile periods of this country's history, Atlanta was, you know, at the center of dramatic change, you know, from Sherman to Martin Luther King, you know, like the course of the country's direction has changed, and it all started like right here. So how do we talk about what Atlanta has been? How do we talk about what Atlanta is now? How do we talk about what Atlanta will be? You know, and I wanted artists to consider those ideas, but to consider them in innovative ways. Like, I didn't want 13 murals of Martin Luther King Jr. You know, I didn't want people to just talk about the Varsity, you know, or Stone Mountain or something like that. But like, how do we interpret the energy, the spirit, the feeling of Atlanta in ways that are stimulating and engaging, that provide a different kind of lens and a different vocabulary to talk about this city and to talk about what it's like to be here?
You talk about that feeling that Atlanta gives off to those who come here, and that feeling that maybe stays with you when you leave. And I think that a lot of that feeling has been communicated through the music. Mm-hmm. of this city. And one of the main components of Elevate 2015, the art of organized noise, and I would love for you to talk about why it was important to highlight organized noise and their contributions to the legacy of this city.
Well, I have been talking and working with Rico Wade from Organized Noise for a couple of years, and we've been kind of bouncing around this idea of the Organized Noise archives. So something that might live at one of the local universities that tells the story of Southern hip hop. Because when we think about, and what, not just Southern hip hop, but hip hop period, when we think about the rise of Organized Noise in the early and mid-90s, it's a very, very crucial part of the story of how we have come to understand not only hip-hop, but also the South and also the city of Atlanta. And, you know, I'm all often thinking back to that moment at the Source Awards when, you know, Dre and Big won, you know, Best New Hip-Hop Artist. And, you know, they got on the stage and they were like, the South got something to say. But mind you, in that room that very night, you know, we're in the midst of one of the most vicious wars, you know, within the Black community between East Coast and West Coast hip hop. Like, nobody was looking in any other direction. It was left and right, you know. And here comes this, you know, this group out of Atlanta, Georgia, who present a whole new spin on things. Like, they, you know, they have grown up listening to music from both of these coasts, but they didn't try to sound like that. And, you know, there were places, you know, around the country, you know, where artists were, you know, really talented artists were trying to sound like they were from New York or trying to sound like they were from, you know, LA or something like that. But here they were like, no, we're from Atlanta, home of the Dirty Birds and the Red Dogs and Red Clay and the Georgia Dome. And we got a Confederate battle flag flying over our state capitol. And, you know, like, telling these stories, painting these pictures that I think really, like, swelled the chests, you know, of people who were from the South and especially from Atlanta, you know, where, you know, I had my family coming down here from New York, like, yo, where's Headland and DeLo? You know, I want to go see that, you know? And it's like, that was really important. I think it remains important, especially now as we talk about contemporary hip hop and you know, everybody from, you know, Seattle to Miami is trying to get that Atlanta sound, you know, the not just the sound in terms of the production and the music, but, you know, the cadences and the lingo, you know, the fashion, the gold from, you know, the gold teeth to the, you know, sagging jeans. Like it's all like it's Atlanta, you know, it's like it's kind of coming up out of here and then it goes other places and people tweak it and do their little thing with it. But, you know, at this core, you can tell where it comes from. Right. And so I thought that that was a really important part of the story, especially as we talk about where Atlanta might go, you know, not only where it is, but where it also might go, that we tell this story and that, you know, as artists and creators of hip hop culture, that we archive and we control the telling of our stories because they're important stories. You know, it's like we I think we talked about this when I was here the last time and I said that quote, like, in the future, historians will tell what happened and artists will tell how it felt. Sure. You know, the music is a major part of that as well. You know, it's that telling of the story. It's just a different medium. And it's important that we, you know, we present that, that we preserve that and that we, you know, have that to feed and raise our next generations on.
In talking about that notion of archiving and remembering and making sure that people pay attention to what happened in the past, with the art of organized noise and being able to present a moment that takes us back to that earlier time around Atlanta, it's hard to find remnants or residue of these past moments. So talk to me about, why this was important in terms of the archival process of capturing different moments of change in Atlanta's history.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, being in a city that is constantly reinventing and recreating itself, that is very easy to lose your grounding, you know, in that sense. And I think, you know, these kind of preserving moments, preserving icons and monuments help us understand not only where we are, but who we are. It's important to the stories, you know, like the principle of Sankofa. You know, you don't know where you're going if you don't know where you came from, right? You can't build a house without a foundation. And you know, it's important that we continue to preserve these moments, especially ones, you know, again, like organized noise. Like that's important. That's so important to the telling of so many stories. It's not just about organized noise. Like it extends into, you know, many, many other facets of what has become American popular culture. You know, it wouldn't be, it's not a stretch just revisiting the impact that the Outkast tour had on the world last year. Like millions and millions and millions and millions of people around the world shaped and moved by two dudes in a Cadillac, you know, like that's epic, you know. And if we're not preserving those stories, if we're not preserving those memories, it's like, why did we do it in the first place? Right. So I think that, you know, it's a important thing now is, again, we're in a major shift in what the city is becoming, that we really take great stock and really take great interest in capturing and preserving and memorializing, you know, the things that have brought us to this point now, so that as we continue to build, we're building on a solid foundation that won't just get washed away in a couple of years and then we have to start all over.
And for our listeners out there who, I'm not going to presume that everyone knows who Organized Noise is or the Dungeon Family, mm-hmm. but I would, to your point, it's not a stretch to say that they've had a tremendous impact on American popular culture through their music, and that extends from Outkast and Goody Mob up to Killer Mike and Future.
Yeah.
I mean, the Dungeon Family, Organized Noise has been very critical to shaping the sound and the perspective of hip hop culture and therefore mainstream American culture, global culture, if you will.
And I would even add to that, you know, that beyond the music, you know, that it actually goes into the visuals as well. Like it goes into the visual culture of America, that it also goes into the literary and linguistic, sure, you know, culture of America.
Yeah. And maybe trying to delve a tad bit deeper into your art and your perspective and linking that to Organized Noise and some of their work. A lot of your work deals with exploring Black masculinity and the different ways in which that's presented and thought about. And when I look at the work of the Dungeon Family, Organized Noise, the different perspectives that were in that music, everything from how men deal with each other in the street to how they deal with religion, how they deal with their significant others, how they deal with their children. There are lots of different relationships that were expressed in their music. Mm-hmm. So for you as an artist and your work, what did you get from the content of their music as it relates to how you approach your work?
Yeah, man. I'll you know, I feel comfortable to say this because I've said it to Rico before as well. But when I first moved here in 93, you know, was around the time Outkast was really starting to get a little bit of steam. And I was so New Yorked out. Like, it was all Wu-Tang. And you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to hear that. Right? I didn't want to hear that Outkast. Yeah, I don't even really understand what they're saying kind of thing. That was my vibe. And one day, a friend of mine, you know, he used to come to my dorm room because he lived off campus. So between classes, he would come in my room and chill or whatever while I was in class. And I came back from class one day, and he left the Southern Playalistic tape in my stereo. And he had it, you know, because, you know, I would just come in, hit the button and, you know, draw or whatever. So I came in, I hit the button, and Crumbling Herb started playing. And I was like, what is this? Like the bass line, the music, it was just like, I was like, yo, this is dope. Who is this? And I, you know, popped the tape out and I looked. I'm like, Outkast, really? So I flipped it over, started from the beginning, listened to it from beginning to end, and I was hooked. I was like, yo, this is really dope. It was so visceral, like everything about it, you know, the music, like their interludes and skits and stuff like that. Like it was funny, but it was smart, you know, so many different things happening. And then I became like an instant fan, you know. But what really got me was actually Goody Mob. So I was by this time I was a junior in college, and a friend of mine had brought me this wooden box from a construction site. It's like a cement form. I guess they used to make bricks or something like that. So it was real kind of ratty and skewed a little bit, but it had a lot of texture and just character to it. And I just thought it was a really interesting looking thing. And I kept it in a corner in my room. And one night I'm in the dorm, I'm just kind of relaxing, and I was listening to Soul Food, and the song Guess Who came on. And if anybody listening is not familiar with this song, it's on the first Goody Mob's first album. It's a song called Guess Who, where each one of the guys is rapping about the relationship that they have with their mother. And my mom died when I was 4. So I've always, you know, had like a really deep, you know, connection with like my own mother, just, you know, from the tragedy of losing her at such an early age. So anyway, I'm listening to this song, man, and it just, like, I don't know, it did something to me, man. And I was playing it for I don't know how long. It was just on repeat over and over and over and over and over and over again. And when I came out of whatever the haze I was in, I had taken that box and I transformed it into what I call a spirit box that was dedicated to my mother. And it just sent me down this, like, rabbit hole, you know. So like I said, my mother died, she was murdered by my father when I was 4. But from that night that happened, I, you know, my siblings and I were like in the next room when it happened, and then my father took us to the police station, turned himself in, and that was it. We never spoke about it. My siblings and I never talked about it. We never had any counseling. Nobody ever, it was like it didn't happen. And so I remembered it, but I always felt like I dreamed it, you know? But anyway, like that song from Goody Mob, like touched me so much that I began to like investigate what happened and talk to my siblings and get them to tell me, you know, what they remembered. And I ended up creating my senior thesis exhibition around those stories, retelling the story of the night that my mother died. And I turned the gallery into like the brownstone apartment that we lived in New York. And it was like this really emotional experience. And people, you know, came into the gallery and were like crying, and they were just really like moved. They were commending me for my courage and thanking me for telling that story. And, you know, some people came and told me their own tragic stories, and just, it was just like really, really powerful. And it was in that moment that I decided, like, I don't want to make art that's pretty pictures. I want to make art that does something, that moves people, that can help heal and change the world the same way I was moved and healed and changed by that Goody Mob song, you know? And Outkast and Goody Mob and Organized Noise and Dungeon Family Music has always had that effect on me. Like, it's real. Like, it's telling a story. It's truth. It's honesty. It's vulnerability. It's all of these different things, you know? And I can think back through their catalog of music to moments where they've moved me like that. Liberation, you know, on Aquemini. Man, I listen to that song every time I go into the studio right now when I'm painting. You know, it's like the feeling that they gave off. And it's a feeling that I can only attribute to Atlanta. I don't know that any other artists from any other place have created music that has that kind of effect, you know, which, again, is why I say when we think about At Last, you know, tour, and, you know, even the Goody Mob tour the year before that, the way that they brought communities of people together to celebrate this sound that came from that red clay basement, you know, in Southwest Atlanta is amazing and powerful to me.
When you talk about their music and where it comes from, and it's interesting because their music and their art and their everything, you know, was from Atlanta. Mm-hmm. It was of this place. And I think that in many ways, lots of other artists have come to Atlanta and are creating in this place, but their music is not of this place.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about even that distinction and maybe the of-ness of a place versus mm-hmm. sort of being just in a place as a backdrop?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, a part of that has to do with the fact that, you know, we live in a commercial consumerist culture, right? And so these guys have been successful doing A, B, and C with this formula. I want to try that formula too. But one of the things, and this is why I really always appreciate Rico's mind, Rico Wade, who's one of the founders of Organized Noise, is he was the director, you know, of that. You know, he actually talks about meeting, you know, Andre and Antoine really early on, and them wanting to try to do a certain kind of sound. He was like, no, this is the sound that you should have. This is what y'all should talk about. This is who you are. Be yourselves. And, you know, and he's saying that this is based on experience he had with groups before Outkast, where they wanted to have a New York sound, you know, but it just didn't, you know, like they were from the South, like you're not from New York. So it didn't feel authentic. And when, you know, when Outkast and Goody Mob and Big Rube and Society of Soul and, you know, all of these groups are creating and making music of this place, there's authenticity in that comes through, you know, in the music that connects to people, which makes it so profound, which makes people, like, you can be from Chicago, but you can identify what Outkast is talking about because they're being authentic, not because they're talking about Atlanta, but because they're being authentic, right? So if you're in Chicago, now you want to, you know, be authentic Chicago. Like, you understand what that is like to be authentic to the place that has raised you, that has shaped your identity and who you are. And I think it's, you know, again, you know, we have a lot of people, you know, coming here and wanting to build off of that sound and build off of that legacy to varying degrees of success. But the idea should always be authenticity first. You know, when you reflect who and what you're from and where you're from, it can only be effective and successful at touching other people, because the thing that we connect to is the authenticity, not the individual distinctions that, you know, that make people separate. But the things that bring us together is that authenticity. We all can connect, you know, at that core essence of it.
So with Elevate Atlanta 2015 and wanting to give everyone some space to love Atlanta or to exhibit that love for Atlanta, as you have spent time thinking about reaching some of the people who may not have heard about Elevate before, what did you want to communicate about what this moment was about and what you were trying to profess through even the theme itself?
Okay. So the idea, again, you know, with the theme, with that notion, Forever I Love Atlanta, you know, was really an expression of pride. I hope that connects, you know, to people. But I think even beyond the messaging, I think the idea that I've had is, even in terms of curating the projects, is creating experiences around this notion of public art that is equally engaging. So there have been many attempts to put art in public spaces, but oftentimes it's from the vision and perspective of the person picking those projects without consideration of the communities that will be affected or potentially impacted by those projects. And I tried to do the opposite, to really think about the community, to think of myself as an audience member first rather than a curator first. You know, I can appreciate, you know, avant-garde street performance art, but does that really move me? You know, like, I wanted to do stuff where people would come to the event and be like, wow, that's really dope. I really enjoyed that experience. Or, oh man, that's a really beautiful mural. Or that's a really thought-provoking image or piece, you know? So it's not just, what is this weird stuff? You know, that's how you lose people, right? So to create an experience that starts from an emotional affect, love, like, I love the city where I'm from, but then to express that love viscerally through experiences that are actually meaningful and engaging, you know, these are the kinds of things that I'm hoping will help to propel, you know, Elevate moving forward, and again, and induce a really heightened sense of pride in the city of Atlanta, and, you know, a heightened sense of awareness around public art and just art in general.
Did you learn anything about Atlanta that you did not know in this process?
I've been learning a lot, learning a lot about the process. I've learned a lot about organized noise and, you know, just things that, you know, hanging around RICO and hearing some of the stories about things that happened have been really enlightening to me. And coming up with the theme, you know, also did a lot of, like, reading and research about just the history of the city of Atlanta, just to kind of give myself a vocabulary to talk about it. You know, again, I'm not from here. You know, I have a healthy dose of love for Atlanta, you know, because it raised me. But there's still a lot about Atlanta that, you know, that I don't know. And I look forward to having opportunities to learn more. But, you know, I also feel like I have had a pretty good run just kind of being connected to the various communities that I've been connected to here just throughout my history here, from being a college student to being an entrepreneur to now being a practicing artist and an academic. Like, you know, I've been privileged to move in a lot of different spaces around the city that continue to inform, you know, the way that I see the city.
All right. Well, where can people learn more about Elevate?
You can get information and detailed schedule and programming for Elevate at the City of Atlanta's official website for the Office of Cultural Affairs, which is ocaatlanta.com. And then we're also on Facebook at Elevate Atlanta and Instagram at Elevate ATL.
All right. Visual artist and curator and scholar, Fahamu Piku. Fahamu, thank you.
Thank you, Floyd. Peace.